Welcome back, sports fans. I'm your host, Tony Kirkoyan, and on today's episode of The Checkdown, we are talking football, and more football as we recap the Pac-12 bowl games, talk about the first round of the college football playoff, and my main man, Jimmy Garoppolo. And as always, things are going to get a little weird during the Blitz package, but first, 2017 is coming to an end, and 2018 is just around the corner. Time to make those New Year's resolutions. I know, resolutions are like babies. Easy to make, but hard to maintain. But listen, it's the end of the year and it's time to get your fitness back on. And you know what makes working out easier? When you have the best equipment for the lowest price. And that, my friends, is where A2 bikes come in. These babies are top-of-the-line road bikes and built with industry-proven parts. You'll be zipping around faster than George Jetson in Orbit City. And guess what? They have an end-of-the-year sale going on right now where you can buy a full-build Speed Freak at the extremely discounted price of $15.99. Go to their website right now at a2bikes.com and get yours. Again, that's a2bikes.com. Do not miss this opportunity. You'll love it, and your wallet will love it even more. But before we get into too much talk, here's your jam of the week. This is Redbone by Childish Gambino. We just did our Tipsy Christmas podcast a couple days ago, but we're going to get another one in. Quick note, a lot of positive feedback on the Tipsy Christmas podcast. Unfortunately for us, it appears our best podcast was when we were tipsy and not talking about anything sports related. I'm not sure what that says about us, but I think we're getting
apparently,
better.
Apparently sports are overrated and being sober is overrated. I had an absolute blast, so hey. Feedback is good feedback, right?
Absolutely. We're good, and we're getting better every time we do it, so hopefully this one is as entertaining as that one was. But speaking of the holidays, are you out of your food coma yet?
Man, Christmas Day killed me. Yeah. Breakfast killed me. I had 3 tamales and 4 eggs, and that was not the plan, but I just kept eating until I felt like I was going to fall asleep. Killed me for the entire day. I could barely eat dinner. I feel like today is the first day that I feel normal again. So yes, but man, it took a couple more days than I thought it would.
Yeah, and for me, the thing that I was not ready for was, I feel like my blood sugar level was all just out of whack when I got back. Like, I had been crushing my mom's cookies for 4 straight days, and like, I feel like it's like an accessibility issue. Like, when I walk around at her house, like, I can just grab it at any time, and so I probably ate like 35 cookies over the 4 days or something ridiculous like that. I was pushing 10 a day. So when I got back home and I didn't have cookies, you know, right around me, it was, my blood sugar was screaming for it. So, but I feel like I'm back on track a little bit. Speaking of being off track, what the hell is wrong with the Pac-12 right now in the bowl games? We're 1-4. The only team that's won is Utah. Utah beat West Virginia 30-14. But UCLA lost to Kansas State, Arizona lost to Purdue, Washington State got crushed by Michigan State. I know Luke Falk didn't play, but still they got absolutely dismantled. And in a real nail biter last night, Stanford lost to TCU 39-37. What is going on?
So a couple things for me jump out. Obviously Utah had a great performance, keeping the Pac-12, well, not above water, right? Drowning below the surface, I guess, or right below the surface.
Yeah.
The Kansas State game is a total wash, right? Josh Rosen didn't play. They had a quarterback in there that, you know, hasn't seen a bunch of time. So for all intents and purposes, that game really didn't exist. Josh Rosen is the only decent player on that football team. So
yeah,
forget about that one. The Purdue-Arizona game was a really close one, came down to the wire. TCU-Stanford was a great game, came down to the wire. I think Arizona and Stanford played great football games, so just got beat at the very end. So I don't think that the Pac-12 is playing terrible, with the exception of Washington State. I mean, to play in the Apple Cup and get beat up like they did, and then come into this bowl game and get beat up like they did, man, I mean, you were talking them up, right?
I was saying that
Falk's amazing, that they're going to beat Washington, that they're this great football team, maybe have a chance to win the Pac-12, and they just absolutely collapsed in the last couple games of the season. That's really the game that stood out to me the most.
Yeah, I feel like I need to maybe stop making predictions and just focus on conspiracy theories, because I'm better at those than I am at predicting who's good and who's not. So
I agree with you.
Yeah.
So do you have any – we've only got one win. I try not – you know, with the Big Boy Pants Awards, I feel like we kind of have to give it to teams that win. But as far as this goes, do you have any Big Boy Pants Awards from the bowl game so far?
I do, and it's somebody that lost. So that rule does not apply to me. Right?
Fair.
Bryce Love gets my Big Boy Pants Award. I just feel like he's amazing. Yeah, he had a great game. He had 26 carries for 145 yards and 2 touchdowns and got injured right before – clutch time in the end of the game, just absolutely destroyed the thumb on his right hand, so he couldn't come in when the team needed it most. And also, not only did he play a great football game, but Stanford played a great football game. Costello threw a couple picks that were not thrown at great times, which ended up maybe losing that football game. But Bryce Love passed Christian McCaffrey for the single-season rushing record for Stanford. So getting that record and then also putting up the stats that he did without being available for his team in the last 2 minutes – I think he gets my Big Boy Pants Award, not only for this game, but just the season as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he capped off a Heisman-caliber season for sure with another great night. And did you see his thumb on the sideline last night bleeding? It was gnarly for sure. But I have a couple other guys that I think should receive a little bit of notice. Both Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss from Utah. Zach Moss rushed for 150 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Huntley passed for 165 and added 57 rushing yards and 2 rushing TDs. You know, I think they basically ran all over West Virginia, and their defense did a great job of stopping West Virginia's offense, who had put up some good yardage and some good points all year. And kind of like what you said, too, I think in a losing effort, Khalil Tate should receive a little bit of notice, even though they lost. He passed for 5 touchdowns, which, you know, that wasn't what he was known for. He rushed for, I think, like 65, but he passed for 5 touchdowns, keeping them close in the game. And when they needed plays the most, he was scrambling in the pocket, finding guys downfield. So he had a stellar performance as well, but still losing effort.
He threw a late interception, did he not?
He did, yeah. Yeah, so that was unfortunate. But, you know, it's always darkest just before the dawn. At least that's what they say. There's still a couple Pac-12 bowl games left. Let's kind of get into talk about that. Right now, Arizona State is playing North Carolina. ASU is playing North Carolina State. So not going to talk too much about that because it's already in motion. But let's talk about USC versus Ohio State and Washington versus Penn State. What do you like about these two games?
So, obviously, the USC-Ohio State matchup is the best bowl game outside of the college football playoff semifinals. These are two teams that won their conferences. They won them, I don't want to say in a dominant fashion, but they were the best team in their conference all year for the most part. Both of them had an argument at the end of the season to get into that college football playoff, but the resumes of the 4 teams that are in currently just ended up being better than those two. I think it's going to be a fantastic bowl game. I think the ratings are going to be off the charts. It's an AT&T stadium, which you and I both know is just an unbelievable place to play. It's just a phenomenal place to have a football game and on TV and in person. I think that USC, coming off a really good win versus Stanford, being healthy, having the time to kind of study Ohio State, to get healthy, to get that line healthy, and Sam Darnold and everybody focused on the Ohio State task at hand. A lot of seniors, this is going to be their last game for them, not only seniors, but guys that are probably going to come out to the draft for USC. On the defensive side of the football, Uchenna Nwosu and Cameron Smith, who just had absolutely, I think they're both all Pac-12 performers, just absolute studs. Both of those guys are going to be going to the league most likely. Sam Darnold, if he comes out, it'll be his last game, so he's going to want to make an impression. And then Ronald Jones, the third Rojo, he's probably going to come out as well. So those 4 guys, the 2 best players on offense, the 2 best players on defense, are going to be leaving this season. So I think they're going to want to end on a high note. Yeah. And I think that USC pulls this game out because they're hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, and I think USC ended the regular season really well. And then also, like you said, I think they're going to get their offensive line back put together, which will be huge for them. So I think the key takeaways for that game is Sam Darnold takes care of the ball. And if USC's defense can stop Ohio State's rushing attack, because they're averaging just under 250 yards rushing per game. So if they can make JT Barrett into a passing quarterback, I think that'll give them a much better chance, because he's so up and down that I think they'll be able to stay close and win it close at the end. I have USC pulling it out 31-28 over the Buckeyes. Do you have a score prediction?
I don't.
Okay.
I just hope USC squeaks it out. I think that they're a better football team. I think it's going to be really close. It's going to be a great game.
Yeah.
So I would go probably with something around what you said, 2 or 3 point game.
Okay. Right now, Ohio State is a 9.5 point favorite. It's an interesting spread. But, you know, you never know in these bowl games. Let's talk a little bit about Washington versus Penn State. What do you like in this one?
So I like Washington. I think that the Pac-12 is due for some good bowl wins. I think they're proven to be better than people thought they were going to be before the Washington State game. Now, with less water, now that Washington State got absolutely destroyed yesterday. Yeah. But they went up against a good football team in the Apple Cup and crushed them. And I think that they're better than their schedule proved to this point. I think Penn State can be one-dimensional at times with Barkley kind of taking the majority of the load. So if you can focus on him and really, I don't want to say shut him down because that's impossible, but if you can limit his influence to just to be mediocre, I think the rest of that football team will struggle to really put up some points. So I'm taking Washington to win that game. I think the Pac-12 is due for a couple good wins, and hopefully they can pull that one out.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for me, this game really comes down to two stud running backs, Myles Gaskin from Washington and obviously Saquon Barkley from Penn State. So it's really going to turn into who gets that going, because the quarterbacks for both teams really feed off of the running game being effective. And so we'll see what happens with that. But Washington also has one of the top defenses in the nation. So if they can kind of contain Barkley, like you said, make somebody else make plays for them, I think they'll have a really good chance to win. I went with Penn State. I'm going Penn State 24 over Huskies 21. I think it's going to be real close, but we'll see how it goes. Let's jump in a little bit to the college football playoff now. First round of that is coming up. We have Oklahoma versus Georgia and Clemson versus Alabama. What do you like in these two games?
I'll run through both of those pretty quick. Oklahoma versus Georgia, I like OU. I think they have Baker Mayfield, obviously the best player in college football. He's proven to be one of the best players in college football the last three seasons as a starter. I think Georgia can be very one-dimensional as far as Nick Chubb and the running game, and just like the Penn State, but even more one-dimensional. They really rely on that running game really heavily, and they have a freshman quarterback in Fromm. So if he can really shut down Nick Chubb, which has been very hard all season, right? The only game that they lost to was against Auburn, and Auburn was absolutely on fire beating everybody. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, their resume is unblemished. Yeah. So I think easier said than done, but I think Oklahoma scores a ton of points, and it's going to be really, really hard for Georgia to be able to keep up scoring-wise, especially if Oklahoma's defense can just focus on Chubb the entire game. And then as far as Clemson, Alabama, I don't have a ton of stats to back this up. Two absolutely powerhouse programs. This is obviously the third time they've met in the last 3 years. They're both great coaches, experienced coaches, both been to New Year's Six Bowls and college football playoffs. I think that it's Alabama's turn to win this football game. I think that they have more motivation knowing that they kind of snuck in at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of playing with house money at this point. And I think Alabama pulls that one out. So I see an Oklahoma-Alabama national championship game.
Yeah, and I actually agree with you on both of those. So that's kind of fun. Oklahoma, you know, great offensive line. They actually have some pretty good running backs, even though Baker Mayfield's been the star. Dangerous wide receivers. They actually have their tight end is a John Mackey Award winner. That's Mark Andrews. And obviously, you still have Baker Mayfield. So a lot of weapons on the offensive end. That'll come down to if the defense can just kind of contain Nick Chubb, like you said. But yeah. Other than that, Alabama, like you said, I can't go against Nick Saban. You know, I think he's hungry, and the last thing you need is to give him some bulletin board material. And like you said, sneaking in at the fourth spot with people taking Clemson, Clemson's favored, even though Las Vegas favors Alabama. But I think that
it's the time too. It's the time. It's 3 weeks yep. for Nick Saban, with all of his experience, to prepare, to really go down deep into the details, to prepare for a team that he's seen twice over the last 2 years. Hard to go against that guy.
Right, exactly. I totally agree. So I have Alabama and Oklahoma advancing. We'll have a little bit of time to see how those predictions went and talk about the final next week. But let's move in to a little discussion about stuff going on around the nation. First big thing, my main man, ex-Celtic Rajon Rondo, turned back time. He had 25 assists in a 128-113 win over the Brooklyn Nets. He's the only active player with 25 assists in a game, and among only 7 players in NBA history to do that. Those other players include Scott Skiles, John Stockton, Jason Kidd, Kevin Johnson, Nate McMillan, and Isaiah Thomas. He got 25 assists in the shortest amount of time. He played 30 minutes and is the oldest player to do so at 31 years old. So good for him. One of my favorite players of all time, especially was on the Celtics, so that's great to see for him bounce back. Next, Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers won again. That's 4-for-4 for him when he starts, and the Browns lost, but no real surprises for either of those stories. You know what we should start calling Jimmy G right now, though? Garoppayolo, because he is carpe diem the hell out of life right now. Honestly, is there anyone else that you'd rather be?
I can't believe that you said that. I was going to say, you know, maybe you should patent that right now. It's such a great thing, but I don't know if you want to tell anybody else outside of me.
Right.
So if you're doing the editing,
maybe edit that.
That part, just because, you know, I'm not quite sure you want to put that out there to the to national public, but hey, you do you.
Yeah.
You do you.
Garoppa YOLO. I'm telling you. He is, I looked at some stats on him because I didn't want this to just be me telling you how much I love Jimmy G. But since he took over as a starter in week 13, right, he ranks among the league leaders for completion percentage at 69%. That's fifth overall. Yards per attempt at 8.7. That's third overall. And he's the league leader in total QBR at 82.1. That's nearly 10 points ahead of Ben Roethlisberger, who's in second place. So he is just crushing it, and he's winning. I think 49ers are going to be really good and really deadly next year. I'm excited to see what he can do with a full season under his belt. What do you think?
Who do they? Do you have in front of you who they play during those games?
No, but I can pull it up, or I can have our stat guys pull it up, who our stat guys also are just me. So let me look real quick.
I have no doubt that Garoppolo and the 49ers will be a lot better last year than they were this year. Hard to say that they could be as bad or worse than they were in the first three quarters of the season. So I'm with you on that. I think that the 49ers have a great quarterback and somebody they can look to, at least for the next couple of years, to be their franchise quarterback, at least until he proves otherwise.
Right.
I'm with you on all of those points. I would like to see who he played to see if he really went against some decent defenses or if he's kind of a victim of circumstance.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's a good point. So I'm looking right now. So he beat the Bears. Bears, Texans, Titans, and Jaguars. So two playoff teams, two good defenses in the Titans and the Jaguars. Not so much with the Bears and the Texans per se, but, you know, two
for
two.
Before that, the 49ers couldn't beat anybody they played, right?
That's true.
So
yep.
Regardless of who they played, the fact that he comes in and wins some games for them, I think that's some great momentum. So I'm with you on that. Yeah, I think the 49ers will be good next year, and that division is just getting nastier and nastier.
I know. It really is. So, and they actually play the Rams this week coming up, but I know the Rams are going to sit a bunch of their players because they're already in, so not sure that can really be counted for him. Other big news, Patriots signed James Harrison. Is this a move of much like Benedict Arnold, maybe Brutus from Julius Caesar, or is he a ring chaser? What do you think about that?
It's brilliant. I mean, every time you think that Bill Belichick's a normal coach and he has great players and he wins games because he puts the right people in the right jobs. He makes decisions and he picks up guys and drops guys. He's the best GM, the best people manager as far as football players go in the history of the game by far. He picks up guys that nobody thinks can play and makes them Pro Bowlers.
Yeah.
He drops guys that everybody thinks are Pro Bowlers and then they end up doing nothing.
Yeah.
And they end up going somewhere else and they end up just kind of falling off the map. He has a knack for not only budgeting his team, right, getting rid of guys that aren't worth the hype and the money that they want to move forward, and then also picking up guys for dirt cheap and turning them into fantastic players. I think Tom Brady and Gronk are the only two guys he's paid in like 15 years. The rest are on like minimum salaries. I think he's an absolute genius, and this move is just another example.
I know, and what makes him even more of a genius to me is not only does he make moves like this consistently, but then he also just shows up to press conferences and gives everybody nothing. He's always just like, we're all about the Jets. He's James Harrison, he's a player. He tackles guys. We're excited to have him. That was my Bill Belichick impression. What'd you think about that?
Press conferences almost make him seem dumb.
I know.
Right? Like, he doesn't, he's not a good public speaker. Like, he can't go out in front of a crowd and let his thoughts out and be... And really like get to the press with the details and really go into all the stuff that he does as a GM.
Right.
But he's the opposite of that, right? So he's playing a fool in front of the media, and then behind closed doors, he's, you know, a football genius. So
yeah,
hats off to him.
I love it. And I love James Harrison. He is one of the studliest humans I've ever seen. Have you seen any of his workout videos?
Oh, I have.
ESPN posted,
SportsCenter posted, Bleacher Report posted. The guy's in there in full sweats, right? Like three layers of sweat. Sweatshirts, sweatpants, just in there just cranking out 300-pound dumbbells. And he's just, I mean, what is he, 40 years old? Like, he's an absolute monster, a monster.
He spends, I think, like $200,000 a season, like, on taking care of his body or something ridiculous like that. I would love to just dispose of $200,000 for acupuncture or massages or whatever, but that's what he has to do to still play and It'll be interesting to see how they use him in moving forward, and if he's a main contributor or if he's just, you know, on the squad. So it'll be a good time. But let's move on to our blitz package. This is where anything goes. You know, we have a couple questions lined up, but the other doesn't know what's going on. So Kyle, why don't you go ahead and hit me with your first one?
All right. So, recent bowl games I've been watching, and it really hasn't been that big of an issue this year. But one of the things that I've been paying attention to is some of these players sitting to prepare for the NFL draft, right?
Yeah.
It happened with the two or three really, really good players last year. Couple players this year. It's not as prevalent, but it seems to become an ongoing trend, and it's increasing over time, right? So couple statements, and then I'll ask you the final question, right? So is this taking away from the bowl games? Are we teaching the wrong values to our kids as far as, you know, having respect for your teammates, taking care of your teammates, being there for the team and the university and representing something bigger than yourself? Is it the media's responsibility to put some pressure on these kids if they sit out to say, if the entire country says, hey, kid, we disagree with this, maybe that puts some pressure and they don't want that negative connotation? So with all that said, does the NCAA or schools individually need to put some rules or regulations in place as far as playing in bowl games or as far as sitting out bowl games to prepare for the NFL draft?
Well, so to start off, you know, I think your question is somewhat biased because I am on the other side of the fence. I think they should sit out if they want to. A lot of these guys are only doing it if they know they're going to be first-round draft picks, which, how do you fault them? That's their financial future waiting for them. And if they go out, and it's happened before, if they go out and they get hurt and they drop and lose a ton of money because of the signing bonus or because of the guaranteed contracts for the first-round guys, then that's on who? That's on the media or the fans that want to see those guys play one more college game for what? We're not... Especially if they don't make the college football playoff, which is another bigger discussion, which if we expanded it, I could see a lot more of these guys continuing to play because a championship matters a lot more than just winning a bowl game that doesn't mean anything. So for me, I say if you don't want to play the last game of the year because you know you're going to be a first-round draft pick, go ahead. I'm all about it for you and your financial freedom. But I don't think there should be any regulations put in because for me, the schools know they're leaving, the coaches know they're leaving, the teams know they're leaving, everybody knows. And yes, is it a selfish decision? Absolutely. But then how selfish is it for everybody else to say, well, you should play for me because I want you to show how important I am to you?
So counter arguments, right? One of the things you said was a lot of these kids that have been sitting out are guaranteed first round draft picks or top five picks. That's a little bit of a different conversation, right? But this year you had an example in Royce Freeman who decided to sit out of the Oregon game. And last time I checked, Mel Kiper doesn't even have him on his big board.
Well, Mel Kiper's
his final college football game, and he might not even be drafted. So you're missing out on probably the biggest game of your life for the chance that you might go to the NFL. I think two things that really upset me is if I was a senior on that team, and maybe I was a lineman or a defensive end or something, and I have a four-year starter, this is the biggest game of my career. I know I'm not going to the NFL. I'm not going to get drafted. I'm not an All-American. And if you're my quarterback or my running back, and you sitting out basically ruins our chances of winning the game, that just means that you are making a selfish decision and you are hurting the other 83 kids on the football team's chance to have a great experience before they leave college, right? So I think you're taking yourself into consideration and forgetting about the whole team that you've been, you know, running lines with all year, you know, lifting weights in practice, grinding, sweating, blood, sweat, tears the whole season. And at the end of it, you're saying, oh, yeah, we're brothers, we're teammates. This is our team. We're a group. We're a family. And then at the end, to say, oh, yeah, well, not really, because I just want to care about my financial future. And then the second point is I have kids. I have two boys. And I don't know how I justify this to them. When you sit here and say it's all about the team, it's about the university, it's about something bigger than yourself, it's all about you, you just play your role. How do you justify what they're doing if you're trying to teach that lesson to youth as they grow up?
Right. That very good points. You know, and I think where my argument comes from is a little bit like how we talked about the one and done rule in NCAA basketball. I think for me, it's along the same lines as far as we shouldn't have any decision making in another person's financial gain or loss, at that matter. And I think for both of those situations, you have kids that have exceptional talent for the most part, that are wanting to go on and make money and have the skill to do it. And why should we prevent them from doing that? I know this is a little bit different than the one and done rule because they these kids have basically played a full season and are sitting out the last game of the year. But I don't know. I just don't think that we should put that restraint on them from sitting out if they know that they're going to be drafted and make a lot of money moving forward. So,
hey, agree to disagree, right?
Yeah, or agree to agree. That's our saying. We always say that. So you should just agree with me. But all right. So let's move into mine. So, you know, this is the last week of the NFL playoff or the NFL regular season. I'm sorry. And one of the funnest days of the year is Black Monday, when all of the mediocre to really bad teams fire their coaches. And I think it's interesting because they kind of, everybody gets fired and then they just kind of shuffle around and a lot of mediocre coaches just get hired by the other teams that they fired anyway. So I want to run down the list of guys that are on the chopping block hot seat, guys that are almost for sure going to get fired and guys that are maybe going to get fired. And I want your opinion on what you think if they should or should not be fired. So first off, Jeff Fisher, can he just be fired again? Because I think that helped the NFL at large.
Yes. Yes, my opinion is yes. The amount of criticism that Jeff Fisher has gotten this year, and he's not even coaching. The fact that he got fired from the Rams and Sean McVay came in and the season's been great, Todd Gurley's for MVP and all of these things, but the fact that Jeff Fisher's name gets brought up as many times as Sean McVay's name gets brought up, it's just, is he crying? He's sitting on his couch just crying, watching TV, like, I swear I'm a good coach. I swear I've had winning seasons. Like, people are just shredding him to the point where I almost feel bad. Like, it's excessive.
Yeah. And, you know, but I think it's kind of fun for our podcast because you're a Rams fan. So, you know, I think it definitely, he's our pinata. Jeff Fisher is
Pinata's gonna break eventually. Yeah, so.
Next year's. Do you think if we bust him open, many quarterbacks will fall out that are really good that he just kept inside of him all a couple of years?
A whole bunch of really crappy quarterbacks.
Yeah. Maybe next year at the Tipsy Christmas podcast, we'll actually make a pinata of him, and we'll do that. That could be fun.
He'll be falling so far that we can give him a call and he'll
join
the show.
Can we tweet this out and see if he'll come on the show and do a interview with us? I actually like Jeff Fisher. I think he's a good guy.
If he ever listens to this segment, he'll never come on.
All right. So for real now. So do you think they should be fired or not? Chuck Pagano for the Colts.
Man, it's been a long time. The Andrew Luck thing is just so tough, right? Yeah. I mean, who can win without your franchise quarterback? Mm-hmm. Who can win without the guy that you see quarterbacking your team for the next 10 years? So only because of that, I say no. But okay. How long has he been with the Colts?
I want to say like 5 years, maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. It's been a while. So I don't think that he should be fired, but I think that he's on a short leash at this point. If Andrew Luck comes back next year healthy, which he should be because he's been injured since like 2012.
Yeah.
He should come back healthy. And if they don't have a winning season and at least go like 9-7, then maybe it's time for him to go.
Okay. What about John Fox from the Bears?
Another situation where you don't have the quarterback in place, right? You have Trubisky. He's young. He's a rookie.
Yeah.
So you can't expect a ton of them. They had a lot of talent leave this in the last couple seasons. But how long has he been there?
He's been there for a while, too. I don't know how long, but he's been there for a while.
And that's the thing, right? Like, if you've had 5 or 6, 7 years and you've really had a good chance to put some winning seasons together, then that's a different story than being new.
Right.
I say give him another chance. I'm too nice for this. Keep going.
So, I guess my follow-up question, well, I was going to ask if he does get fired, is Trubisky the next Jared Goff?
I mean... That brings up an interesting point because everybody was so down on Jared Goff because of the season he had last year, and people weren't really pumped on Jeff Fisher, but the numbers that Jared Goff put up, he thought, well, if you're a good quarterback, regardless of the team that's around you, you're going to put up some decent stats. You're going to look like you're at least decent.
Right.
But then now that you bring somebody in like Sean McVay and you get a couple wide receivers and you bring in, I think, one offensive lineman, the team's not that different, but the coach change made Jared Goff look like an almost Pro Bowler as opposed to somebody that should be fired.
Right.
That difference is probably going to make some of these NFL teams think, hey, maybe our young quarterbacks aren't as bad as they look. Maybe we just need a change in personnel and a change in the scheme.
Right.
And we can turn this whole thing around. So that whole situation does not bode well for some of these coaches.
Yeah. Okay. What about Jim Caldwell from the Lions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he'd be fired. Stafford's a stud. You've had great talent in that team for a long time. And they almost remind me of the Bengals in the sense that they seem to be decent every year. 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, whatever it is. And if they make the playoffs, they lose first round, or sometimes they barely miss out. And at some point, you got to jump over that hill and really make a push in the playoffs. Otherwise, you got to move on, right? And like you said, maybe you let him go, and then one of these other mediocre guys comes playing. And it's one of those things where it's just, oh, yeah, but one of them's going to be a good fit. It's like, I don't know, maybe you should look elsewhere instead of just rotating the same six NFL coaches through 10 teams for 15 years and seeing what works.
I agree, though. It's amazing to me how the Lions can be, like, average all the time, but also kind of suck all the time. Like, it's so weird. They'll have, like, three or four games every year where you're like, oh, dang, Matt Stafford, he should be MVP. And then, like, three or four games where you're like, oh, my God, did Matthew Stafford and Marvin Jones get hurt, or did they not play? Like, what the heck happened here? And I just, like, I don't understand if it's just because they suck or what's going on, but that, it seems to be, they're so up and down. And I don't know if that's a coaching schematic thing or personnel thing, but a quick side note, just because I said it. Do you ever notice that, like, when he's doing something really well or has a really good game or in the MVP conversation, they call him Matt Stafford, but if he's ever, like, playing really crappy, he's, like, Matthew Stafford? It's kind of like,
yeah,
if,
it's
like if your
like
mom...
Switch, like, the mom mode,
like, if you're... if your mom's getting mad at you, Tony, or Anthony, stop eating all the cookies.
Have they ever used his middle name? Because
I don't know.
That would be real offensive. They start using his middle name, then we got a problem.
Yeah, Matthew Average Stafford. I don't know if everyone wants to use that middle name or not, but...
so he is not the problem in Detroit. Right?
True.
Matthew Stafford. He's a gunslinger, right? He's got a huge arm.
Yeah.
He's accurate. He can run around the pocket. I don't think he's the issue. I mean, if you got a quarterback like that, you got to be able to put pieces around him to at least make the playoffs every year and give yourself a chance. He's one of those guys that is in the Pro Bowl conversation every single season. And there's so many teams in this league that are struggling to find a quarterback that will lead them for the next 5 or 6 years. If you have one, you have to take advantage of it as a general manager, as an executive. If you have that quarterback, it's gonna be your franchise. If you got to rotate GMs, coaches, running backs, offensive linemen, wide receivers, whatever it is, you do it, because very few teams have guys like him in place. And if you have it, you have to take advantage of it. And they're not doing that right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, what about Dirk Cutter from the Bucks, Tampa Bay?
I really thought they were going to be better this year, Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I think Jameis Winston's got a ton of talent. Mike Evans is a stud. He kind of had an underwhelming season. Suspended for a game or two.
Yeah.
But that's a really, really, really tough division.
Yeah.
I mean, three of the teams in that division might make the playoffs.
I know.
Carolina, New Orleans, and Atlanta.
Yeah, that's
Atlanta
crazy.
Was the Super Bowl last year, and then Carolina and New Orleans are 11-4 going into the last week of the year. I mean, it is really, really hard. That team has to play both of those teams twice to judge Tampa Bay for not winning a bunch of games in the division that they're in. And with Jameis Winston being like the youngest quarterback in the NFL or something like that, he's like 21, and he's been in the league for like 3 years, like something. I forget how young he is. They're 22 or 23. He's really, really young. He's like a year younger than anybody in his class.
Yeah.
So I think give him time. I think they have good pieces in place, and hopefully one of the teams in the division takes a step back and they can kind of sneak in there. For right now, with the way that division looks, whoever's coaching, they stand no chance.
Yeah. Okay, so now I have three maybes. We'll go through this quick, but three guys that are not on the hot seat as much, a little bit more leniency, but do you think they should be fired or not? Mike Mularkey from the Titans. Mike Mularkey from the Titans?
The Titans? No. Right? The Titans have a chance to make the playoffs. I think that anytime that you're in... I mean, that's a terrible division.
But does anyone actually want to see the Titans in the playoffs?
No.
Does anyone actually like the Titans? Jeff Fisher coached there. Nobody wants Jeff Fisher. Nobody wants anything...
And you have to take advantage of that. So I'm kind of going against my previous thought here, but... anytime that you're in the playoff hunt and you have a chance to make a run, even though nobody really wants to see the Titans in there, and their division is not great at all. But if you're winning at least 8 games, 9 games in a season, you deserve a chance, unless you've been doing it for 6 or 7 years and you're just continuously mediocre, like the Lions or the Bengals, or like I said previously.
Yeah.
So No, I don't think so. I think that for all we know, they win on Sunday and then they win a couple games in the playoffs and all of a sudden they have a fantastic season. So at this point, you know, definitely not.
Okay. Well, you know, he's trying to make the Smash Mouth run it down your throat sexy again, and I don't like that. So I'm tired of his malarkey. It's an Irish word if you didn't know that.
I mean, they got two great running backs, though. What would you do if you had Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray?
That's a good point.
You would jam it down the throat.
You would? Right? Yeah, they're both huge men. Like, I feel like they're like Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge, like that same sort of, like, they shouldn't be playing running back. They should be like our tight ends or like our power forwards or something like that. All right, last two. Hugh Jackson from the Browns is a maybe, and he's 1-31 in his two seasons. How does that happen?
Oh, gosh. I didn't even know they had a coach. I thought it was like a college club team where they all just kind of like huddle up and decide who plays. But what do you do? What do you do if you're the Browns? You just like rotate coaches every single season until you win three games?
I know.
Then if you win three games, do you keep that coach? Like, there's so many things wrong with that franchise. How do you point out the coach as being the problem? And then, like I was saying earlier, if you don't have a quarterback, what's the coach supposed to do? I mean, you can't make a second or third stringer into a playoff contender. That's just not going to happen. So, I don't know. But how do you argue with keeping a coach that can't win a football game? That is rough.
I feel like the Cleveland Browns are like their reverse LeBron James, as far as, like, you know how we talked about the expectations for him are so high to win an MVP. Theirs are like so low to keep a coach. It's like, just win two or three games and you'll be here for the rest of your life.
Give me two. Just give us the second pick in the draft. Not the first. Give us the second. You got a job.
All right, last one. Jason Garrett from the Cowboys.
Oh, man, that's tough. I think his leash is getting shorter and shorter. I really do. A lot of talent, but they had such a great season last year, and it's really unexpected. So I don't know how much of the success of last season was the coaching versus Dak and Zeke just really coming out as superstars. This year was a real tumultuous year off the field with Zeke's suspensions and appeals and everything going back and forth, and they had so much media attention, even more than, you know, America's team already gets with Jerry Jones talking to the media more than the coaches do. So, I mean, I think he's on a short leash. I think he has a couple more years. I think next year is a huge year for Jason Garrett, because with that quarterback playing the way he's playing and with Zeke coming back and actually playing a full season and that offensive line, the way they've been playing the last couple years, if they don't win, you know, 11, 12, 13 games next year and really win the division, then you really got to start looking at the coach and saying, maybe we need to go in another direction. Yep. He's been there for a while, too.
Yeah, he has. He's been, for a long time, so... All right, well, that kind of rounds it out for me as far as the Black Monday goes. It's not nearly as fun as, you know, the Black Friday after Thanksgiving, but a lot of these guys will have to do a little dance around the nation and getting hired either as an offensive or defensive coordinator or something. So we'll see what happens with that. What's your second one?
Struggle somewhere else. A 4-12 team will fire a coach, and they'll go to another 4-12 team. They'll try the same thing. It's amazing. The coaching carousel in the NFL is just blows my mind. Like, what? How do these teams think that hiring coaches that other teams fire over and over is eventually going to work out? Like, just, it doesn't make sense to me, but they keep on doing it.
Yeah, you know, who most likely will get hired in the coaching carousel? Jeff Fisher. Mm. Can't wait to see where he ends up. I cannot wait to see where he ends up.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. All right, what's your second one?
So my second one is pretty simple, right? We've been talking about the holidays lately, and we had a tipsy Christmas podcast, and I don't know what you ate before we were in studio for that, but a lot of people eat ham on Christmas.
Oh.
And I love ham, and I don't get to eat ham on Christmas.
Okay.
So I have a two-part question, right? What do you guys eat for Christmas dinner? Is it traditional or is it kind of non-traditional? And do you do it every year? And then also, what do you like better, Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner?
Ooh, okay. That is a great question. I feel like Christmas breakfast is a bigger deal in my house. We do cinnamon rolls, we do pancakes, we do bacon, eggs, we do the whole shebang after presents and all that. I can't remember what we had for Christmas dinner. Oh, we had turkey. Yes, thank you, Alex. We had turkey. So we're not real ham people either. But it was, I enjoyed it. And I think because it was turkey on both Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, it's hard to decide which one I like more. But I am a huge Thanksgiving fan in general. I think it's the greatest holiday, one of the greatest holidays of the year, as far as you just get to shove your face full of carbs and a bunch of other stuff and then take a huge nap while you're watching football. Like, that's kind of, I feel like, what 99% of Americans want to do. And you get to do it without any strings attached on Thanksgiving Day. So, yeah.
So I think, I'm with you. Our family does the Christmas breakfast as the big meal. Mm-hmm. So we do tamales and eggs and salsa. And my family has kind of more of a Hispanic background, so it gets that little twist.
Okay.
But it's delicious, and dinner is like a steak and potatoes, kind of traditional dinner. So I like the Christmas dinner more than Thanksgiving. One thing you brought up was the football piece at Thanksgiving, and we can talk about this in a separate podcast, but they got to do something about those games to make them better.
Oh, yeah. True.
Because they wait to see which game they're going to put on Sunday night, right, to make sure that it's the marquee matchup. Why can't they do the same thing for Thanksgiving? Why can't they wait until 2 weeks before and then put – Patriots, Steelers, and, you know, Rams, Seahawks at Thanksgiving, so we really want to watch it, because I feel like the last couple of years I've been very disappointed as far as who's playing on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, so. No, it's, you know, and I think they always try and keep the mainstays as far as the Cowboys and the Lions and those two teams, but they're not always playing each other, you know, and so it kind of just falls at the mercy of the scheduling and whoever they happen to play that weekend, but I think they could do a better job of maybe at least having the marquee matchups at a better time. So,
agreed.
All right. Next question for me. Super Bowl prediction right now. Go.
Oh, shoot. I want to say the Rams, but there's just so much inexperience. I think Pittsburgh goes.
Okay.
I think Antonio Brown comes back and – I said this last year too, though. I think Ben Roethlisberger with the playoff experience, the Super Bowl rings, the Super Bowl experience, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith, and Martavius Bryant as your wide receiver core, and then Le'Veon Bell in the backfield. I don't see how you beat that offense. That offense has so much experience, so much depth. They're two dimensional of balance, and they can run the football as well as they can throw the football. And Roethlisberger is just such a stud. He's so hard to bring down. So I think that they end up winning the AFC. And they get revenge over the Patriots, who just beat them recently. And then in the NFC, man, Minnesota's looking real good. I just have no faith in Case Keenum.
Oh, you got to get over that. You got to get over that.
And I think that the backup for the Eagles, there's no way they're going to get there with a backup quarterback. So I think it's probably between New Orleans and the Rams. But I'm going to say Rams.
Okay, wow.
I'm going to say Rams. Steelers, I think that the Rams beat the Saints already, so we know that we know that the Rams can do that. Mm-hmm. Carolina's really, really hit and miss, and Cam Newton gets injured every 12 minutes. And then, like I said, the Eagles have a backup quarterback, and it's Case Keenum, and I have no faith in him, so I'm going Steelers, Rams, in the Super Bowl. You've heard it here.
Case Keenum was just nominated, or just received an award for the best college quarterback of all time. Actually, I made that up, but he could be because his stats are off the charts. So you should get over that fact because he's got skills. He's got some skills. But
he had an amazing college career. You're right about that.
And he's been very good for the Minnesota Vikings. All right, well, my prediction, I'm going New England versus New Orleans Saints. And I'm going with Brother Breeze, guy who's in my same fraternity, taking it home, getting his second Super Bowl. You know, maybe I should reach out to him to see if he'll come on this podcast because of the fraternity connection. Brothers helping brothers. I feel like let's put that out there.
Yeah.
Get him on. We'll wait till after he's done with the playoffs, but I feel like he can come on and maybe we can really, you know, because our relationship is so deep just being in the same fraternity that I feel like maybe he'll do that. He'll do us a solid and he'll come on. He'll really launch us into stardom if he comes on. Can you imagine if we got Drew Brees on the...
Oh, man.
All right.
Sure to say everything good about him, so if that's a possibility, he's like, oh, yeah, I love your show.
Yeah.
Oh,
just
talk great about my team.
You sure you don't want
to... Saints, Steelers in the Super Bowl just so Drew Brees will come on the show.
Right. If Drew Brees will come on the show, we both have the Saints winning. If he doesn't come on the show, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers beating the LA Rams.
Exactly.
All right, fair enough. What's your third one?
I don't have a third one. That's all I got.
Okay.
Well,
okay, I've got one that's kind of fun. It's a would you rather. So, would you rather take a punch from Mike Tyson?
Oh, gosh.
Or a field goal attempt into your man kibbles and bits from Adam Vinatieri?
I'm glad you didn't say Greg Zuerlein. And I'm not making money for either of these things.
No, you're not.
I just have to choose one.
I mean, we could put money on the line if you want. It's a hypothetical, so we could change it.
So if it was like $4 million,
yeah,
you could do either one of these things.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Both of those things could have serious long-term effects. Like, I would say taking a punch, but I mean, my nose could never look the same.
Yeah.
I could have brain damage. Like, I could end up just kind of waddling around the house like an 80-year-old, and then on the other side, I want to have a third kid, and that could totally end the chances of that.
I feel like Mike Tyson could, like, kill me with one punch. Like, I might die if he gets me right in the sweet spot.
He could die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, just so that I live to see another day, I'd probably take the field goal to the nether region.
Okay.
I guess.
That's, yeah.
I mean, those are such terrible options.
To lose-lose. Kind of pigeonholed you there, but, all right. Well, you know, that wraps up the Blitz package, and this was actually also the end of the podcast itself. Kyle, anything you want to sign off with?
I'm really excited about the college football playoff. I'm excited for the NFL playoffs. I think they're going to be great. Everybody watch that USC-Ohio State game tonight. It's going to be fantastic. Two conference champs going at each other, and I think it's going to be, you know, one of the best bowl games of the season, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, I agree. So if you want to reach out to us about anything, if you want to jump in on our pinata bashing of Jeff Fisher, you can find him at Kyle_Risco on Instagram, me at AG Krikorian for Instagram, or at Tony Krikorian on Twitter and Facebook. Please listen on iTunes. We are now on iTunes, and we would love for you to give us some feedback and a rating there. So we appreciate all the listeners. We are slowly increasing a little bit of an audience, and that makes us happy. So we'll be sure to add in more tipsy podcasts, because that seemed to be well received. So we may have to do a couple more of those. But we appreciate everybody listening and give us some input. So thanks. We'll catch you guys next week on The Checkdown.